This is Brandon Bauman from the band Diamond Lane, and I give you the right to rock. Yeah!
The right to rock.
Should we do it together?
Do it together.
Freedom reigns like a hurricane. America, you are the promised land.
See, we do it so much better.
Oh, dude, fucking...
We don't need the reunion. The River Dogs reunion doesn't have to happen. We'll just go out like fucking Tenacious D.
Acapella.
And do fucking acapella.
I like it.
I mean, why do we need to be any good?
I don't know. I am just thinking that...
If that's the requirement, we don't have to be any good? Done.
That's what I'm saying.
Done. We knocked it out.
You guys suck at suck.
Well, thanks for bringing us back to Earth.
Yeah, appreciate that. Keeping us grounded.
No problem.
This guy. I can't believe the fucking video is actually going.
Oh, and the fucking video is not looking so hot.
I know. Why is Tony Katane on stage?
It looks like Tony.
He looks like his own wife.
I tell you what, if I didn't know better, I'd probably fuck that.
I mean,
what did you not know better?
Yeah, what's your line that you're drawing?
I said, dude.
And when's that stopped you?
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing.
Nothing. We're just wondering.
Hey, love wins, man.
Yeah.
You assholes have been on vacation. You just start this shit already.
Yeah, isn't that how it works? Like, do you ever fucking stop?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What, a cat got your tongue?
Maybe.
Any fucking...
Or a McCheeseburger.
And that shit does his fucking eyebrows like... Dee, 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 dee.
Yeah, no shit. That's weird how he just fucking just stops him up like that, you know?
No shit. Vi's in rare form.
Yeah. Well, we started the show with some fucking River Dogs. America. Fucking.
It's that time of year.
It's red, white, and blue time, Holmes.
Exactly, Holmes. These colors don't run.
Hey, guys.
Eh?
Yeah, what do you want? Come on, we're trying to start a show here.
Just want to say, take a look up here. I'm modeling my red, white, and blue job.
This fucking guy.
Happy 4th, guys.
More like, happy quarter. No shit. Maybe 2 inches tops.
No shit. Fucking turtles up there. Did he go back in his shell, pal?
Over there. No, seriously, though, as always, we take our summer sabbatical.
Yes.
I, Genghis, you, Ragman, and you like to travel the world, whereas I like to travel my my apartment. Look around, see what's going on.
Yeah.
But we closed down the gates here at the Estates.
Yes.
At the Nightmare Studios campus, and, you know, send the staff home. We get the shuttles out so they can...
Yeah.
And they can all
we're have. Good like that.
We're nice. We try to help people out.
Yeah, we do.
And it's like when Disney World shuts down for the fucking, you know,
right.
for the season. And
for the
says,
one day.
Yeah, we got to clean up.
Fucking robots can go get oiled.
So the robots can, like, take the bodies and get them out of the way.
Exactly.
Take away, like, iRobot. But, no, anyway, so we're here. We're doing our thing. So it's kind of a mid-year, July 4th,
yeah.
Independence Day kind of celebration. And... We, as always, we got beer, that's for sure. I'm excited to get to that. But
well, let's, before we get to our beer,
yeah, tell us
why we're opening our beer. Let's celebrate July 4th with a little keel.
Oh,
4th of
yeah.
July. Let's do it. That.
Nice. Always nice.
Let's get that beer open over
let's
there.
Let's do it. What do we got? You got the opener? The official Right to Rock opener. We'll let you do your thing.
Every fucking time.
Now this one looks pretty good. It's I haven't seen this one. You didn't you tell me about this?
I picked this up on one of my travels. Have not had it yet. And we're drinking out of some cool little cups I picked up on my sabbatical.
Yeah, that's
some
right.
Mini Sapporo cups imported from Tokyo.
Tokyo.
And Genghis hasn't busted my balls yet about bringing more glasses back from my travels.
Shit. Well, at least these are fucking tiny.
They are tiny.
They're kind of cool though. I like these little glasses. Dude.
They're cool, huh?
You stole them, did you?
Maybe.
Just hauling ass.
Actually, the guy in the little restaurant was pretty fucking cool. He was like, almost honorable ragman. That wasn't racist, was it?
I was going to say, what could be more American than racism? This guy.
No, the guy was super cool. I was like, dude, can I buy one of these? And he brought me two and just gave them to me.
And he's
totally
like,
nice
you're
guy.
Fucking
yeah.
kidding me.
Yeah.
He's like, tell you what, two glasses, I never see your face again.
You know what? I looked at him and said, Shang Tsu wins.
And then they threw you out of the country.
Pretty much.
We will not tolerate your racism.
So what are we drinking over there, Paisan?
This is the Dragon's Milk Stout from the New Holland Brewing Company. They're out of Michigan. And it's an American Double or Imperial Stout at 10% ABV.
Holy shit.
Cool-ass label, but we'll get to that. It's a Dragon's Milk Stout. It's an ale aged in oak barrels. So that's a really huge fucking thing this year, I've noticed. Everybody's got something. It's aged in bourbon barrels. It's aged in fucking tequila barrels. Aged in wine barrels. It's all about the age. And the new one from Stone, it's called like Stochastity or whatever. It's another one of those one of those collaboration ales. And it's a mix. They call it the mixtape. And it, or something like that, where it's they took one beer, it's the same beer, and aged it in like oak barrels or something. And then the other beer, so it's like old, it's been aged for like a year. And the other one's new, they just made it. Same beer, but they just made it. Uh-huh. And they mix it half and half together into this new ale. Sounds interesting.
Yeah,
I like. Bet. I have to say, Stone, I've come to appreciate them. They're starting to pick up their game. Yeah. They used to be like, eh, but now they're like, they make some good shit, especially when they do the collaboration stuff. But anyway, these guys, however, they get a nice score on the Beer Advocate. From the boys, they get an 86, very good. But from the you know, the fans, the people that go to the site, they get a 90.
Oh, wow.
Which is outstanding. So that's pretty exciting. It says here on the notes, commercial description, a barrel-aged imperial stout with roasty malt character intermingled with deep vanilla tones, all dancing in an oak bath.
Dancing.
Yep.
I like it.
They say the 2014 bottles are 11% ABV, which is interesting. So I guess it always varies whenever they bottle.
Yeah, whenever they get it.
But let's get into it. The label is nice. It's got a little, what do you call it, shadow, silhouette of a dragon over a big oak barrel. I guess that's appropriate. Daenerys should be here from Game of Thrones. I don't watch Game of Thrones, but
I
think that bitch is hot, so Emilia Clarke. But she's in the new Terminator movie. You should know. Holmes. Did you see it?
No, not yet. I want to see it.
Oh, I thought you said you had.
No, cool. No, I thought you were because you're kind of a geek like that.
I'm huge into it. Yeah, they say basically Arnold makes the movie. They said if it weren't for Arnold, it'd be just another fucking bullshit sequel.
Is that Arnold? Is that you?
Of course it's me.
How you doing, Arnold?
I'm doing very well. How are you, sir?
Good, good. Thanks for joining the show, sir. Governor. I'm sorry.
Former governor of California. Yes.
Can we call you Arnie?
Yeah, of course you can. You can call me anything you want as long as my career keeps going.
How's Mildred?
Yeah, who the fuck is Mildred?
That's your maid that you fucked and you had the kid.
I can't remember all the women I've been with. I've been in so many movies. I've met so many women. I'd also like to tell you about something.
Hold on a second.
What's going on? Who's that?
McCheese, what the fuck you got to do with Arnold? He's too big for you.
Hold your cheeks there, tough guy. Nobody's too big for me, all right? No fee is too big, by the way. Also, Mr. Schwarzenflagen, I got a word for you, mister.
Schwarzenflagen?
My name is Schwarzenegger. It's Austrian. I'm the Austrian Oak. Wow.
Look, just don't get your Cheetos in an uproar, tough guy. Look, I got a bone to pick with you. And I ain't fucking around. You'll see the lawsuit. It's coming.
I don't know what you're talking about, you strange hamburger.
Look, tough guy. It's comments like that's going to keep your ass in jail. You understand me? Now, just take your ass out of here. Take that shotgun
with you. Arnold, wow. Okay.
Yeah, don't get excited, tough guy.
Yeah, I didn't know you were...
Everything's cool. We appreciate you showing up.
Yeah, thank you.
No need... You guys, if y'all want to have a discussion...
Do what you got
to
do.
Take it out to the lounge.
We don't want our beer to get any warmer. Thanks
That's
for interrupting.
That's for damn sure, yeah. Let's keep this moving along.
I didn't know... I'm confused. I thought he was represented by McCheese, but there may be some sort of...
I think there's from back in the day, before he got really big.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a thing.
You're sniffing that, and I'm dying.
I can't help it. Let's get into it. We said the label was cool. Let's go straight into the aroma.
That's
nice.
Dude.
I would say that's about four. I'm giving that a four.
As
for the look, that thing is dark as pitch.
Oh, yeah.
It's a beautiful looking. Yeah. It looks like it's gorgeous. The lacing.
Oh, I'm fucking dying over
beautiful
here.
And sudsy. I'll give that a four as well. Let's just dive right into it. Cheers.
Do it. Cheers, homies.
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather.
Oh, God, that's good.
Nice. That's real nice.
Fuck, that's good.
That's a four right there.
Yeah,
it's all I see where this
fucking
is going.
Fucking A, dude.
Mm-hmm. This is nice. Of course, he's coming in at... Let's see what we got here. He's right at 64 degrees.
Do you taste alcohol at all? I don't.
I taste a little bit, but
you
not
taste
at
like
all.
Whiskey or,
yeah.
or bourbon I mean, or something it's in at a, the well, end.
I
mean,
aged in bourbon barrels, so maybe that's where you get that.
I taste the bourbon.
And it just it gives it more nice character, because bourbon's kind of a charred wood kind of smoky flavor anyway.
That's nice. I dig.
That's fucking nice, dude. Yeah, I think four away on the totally as well. Always nice to hear the horns, knowing that things are going well. Fuck yeah, that's fantastic. Would you say you picked this up on your travels?
It's fantastical. Yeah, I picked it up. I don't know where. I can't remember. I think I might have got it in Oklahoma or something like that. Mm. Or Colorado, one of the two.
And I know you pick up a lot of your shit in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So,
dude, there's a store there. Forget about it.
I was going to say, as a place up there, it's your place.
Yeah. I think I might have brought that in from Colorado, though. I can't remember. Cool. But we had just had that, God, who the fuck? The brewery out of Kansas City that we like, Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
They had the barrel-aged
stout
that we had.
Yeah.
It was a 4.2, I believe.
Nice.
And I thought, fuck, I guess that's the thing.
Fucking A, dude.
Yeah.
Sweet. I love a good beer, man.
Oh, me too.
Picked up a bunch of them while we on sabbatical. And mostly, interestingly, Buffalo Bayou. Those guys are really making a lot of good stuff these days, so I'm excited about it. Did we totally mention who we were watching?
No, and that's what I was about to do here. We'll watch a little Whitesnake. I think we mentioned Vi.
Yeah, from the era of the Vi album that he was on, right? Was that the self-titled one? No, the one after it.
Oh, no, it was the one after. God, I forget the name of it, though.
Slip of the Tongue?
Slip of the Tongue, yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice.
And so this is live in Donington, 1990. This is an older video. We just pulled the plastic
way
off
older.
It, though.
The quality is not that great.
Yeah,
it's great not seeing the show, but yes. Yeah. And then this looks like it was filmed on fucking like old iPhones and shit.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not that great.
The cameraman was like, I'm a little bit drunk, right?
What it looks like, actually, to me, it looks like those old school, you know, like video cameras like for TV, but it looks like it's zoomed in just so you can see anybody, because it has that weird kind of close-up look to it, like they really had to zoom across the crowd in a giant. Is Donington a pretty big place?
Yeah, Donington was
Castle
huge.
Castle Donington, right?
Yeah, so Castle like Donington Festival. Okay.
So that's probably what it is. The cameras are way back there in the crowd, and they're just having to zoom in to see him.
But the clarity of the picture's not even that great either.
No, it's really it's like it's off a.
It's like they dubbed it off a video,
like a second generation video copy or something off of VHS. Oh well. But it's cool to see him. This is
It's cool to see it. I never saw him with Vi. I saw the 87 lineup with Vivian Campbell and Vandenberg.
Yeah.
I didn't see him with Vi because I didn't really care for that record. And
I don't think I ever saw him until we saw him at Bayou, right?
Oh, yeah. We saw him with Judas Priest. They opened up for Judas Priest.
Yeah. And that was, I think the first time I'd ever seen Whitesnake live.
That was the second for me.
Oh, well.
Because I saw them back in the day, and they opened up for somebody. I can't remember who.
Fucking Vi, so masterful.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
That, this is about the peak of his powers, right? When he had already done... Because that's the same guitar Passion of Warfare, which was this huge fucking... That's where everybody went, fucking Vi. How did we not know about this guy?
Well, it's kind of... I mean, if there wouldn't have been the grunge movement...
Uh-huh.
I wonder if Vi would have tried another band type thing. I mean, he did the record
with
Devin Townsend.
Yeah. I know you really dug Sex and Religion.
Yeah,
I really dug that one. It was not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all right. I mean, I certainly like him in a band. I don't even mind him singing. I like him, tell you what, I like him better singing than I like fucking Satriani singing.
Yeah.
And I love Satriani, but don't sing, Satch, please.
I would have liked to see Vi. I would love to see him back with Roth, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
That just, him and Billy Sheehan with Roth, that was awesome.
Basically, he just needs a good singer.
Yeah.
If he could get a really good singer, I don't know who would be good for him. I wonder, is he really suited for something like Ani Logan or somebody? Is
that maybe. Too... I don't know. I thought he worked, his best match was probably with Roth. But I liked him with Graham Bonnet with Alcatraz.
Yeah, or how about, I can't remember his name. Eric Martin.
That would be good.
You just need somebody who can... want someone who can sing well, and that's...
Jeff Scott Soto.
Okay. See, because I was going to say, for all you like Roth, really what you like about Roth is the macho, the bravado, all that bullshit. It's not because he's a great singer.
It worked well with him and Billy Sheehan. in rock, I thought.
Mostly that's Vine Sheehan that's so great.
The songs were good. It's not because
Roth wrote them. That's what I mean. It's like you insert any good vocalist in there, I think it would have been just as fun. But it only got its appeal because everyone was like, oh, it's Roth. Roth is back. And that's why everyone leaped on it. They otherwise would have said, who the fuck is... Unless you were into Talas or into fucking Zappa or Alcatraz when Vibe was with him, you wouldn't know who those guys were.
But I think out of all the bands that he did that we're talking about here, Whitesnake was probably the weakest. I thought Roth was the strongest, and then Alcatraz.
Disturbing the Whitesnake below Alcatraz, huh?
Yeah. Alcatraz was awesome. You want to hear something? How about God Bless Video?
Oh, sure. That's a classic.
Let's do it.
Said Wire in the Wood.
Well, that's a great one too.
Yeah, but anyway, though, this is certainly right around that time he was fucking crazy. He had the nutty hair and he still is kind of crazy, but this is when he was just totally nuts.
Hey guys.
Yo.
May I interject?
You already have.
I already have a lot.
I gotta say, his time with Frank Zappa was just probably the best vocalist ever. I mean, you guys go on and on about like Rob Halford and Ronnie James Dio, Frank Zappa. Oh, man.
Oh, Frank Zappa. I thought you were talking about Dweezil Zappa.
No. Get your head out of your fucking ass. Frank.
Frank is pretty badass. Calm yourself, dude.
Dude, what are you gonna fucking jack off of yourself or about Frank?
No. I'm just saying.
You need, like, your inhaler or something?
Were you diagnosed with asthma over the brain?
I know, all this time we've been giving him shit. Maybe he just had a fucking medical condition.
Yeah, maybe he's got asthma. I don't know.
Now, to say Frank, he had a vocal range that people didn't know, other than a few select few.
A few select few.
Uh-huh.
Okay, how do you know about this?
Got my wage.
This fucking guy. In any got case, I don't know if Frank's known as a vocal fucking brilliant guy. I think
Frank Zappa was probably one of the worst vocalists.
Everyone talks about what a fucking amazing guitarist was, but I never really listened to his guitar work to know that. I know he wrote some cool, weird songs, but I didn't know he was like some sort of virtuoso. I mean, they talk about him like he was a motherfucking virtuoso.
Well, I reviewed a video of theirs a while back, and Frank could play.
He's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah,
that's cool.
He's not like Vi. I mean, it's a different style, but
yeah.
I mean, he was good. But as a vocalist, the guy just stupid.
He did it because it's like, I guess I'll just sing this too. Yeah, it's like, it's not like he...
Let's be weird! Hey, guys!
No, but anyway, it's not a bad video. Certainly, I love the songs from this era. There's, mm-hmm. there's a good couple of albums right around there. Obviously, the best one, self-titled, but...
I think we should play some White Snake.
So follow-up, it was not bad. Go for it, bro. What do you got?
You want to pick something?
No, you got it.
I How trust about... your judgment.
You always go the curve. I always go like straight down the mainstream.
I'm always going to go something a little more mainstream.
Oh, okay, go for it.
Love Ain't No Stranger.
There you go.
I love the solo by that. Okay. I mean, not by fucking Sykes. Sorry.
Who knows where the cold wind blows? I ask my friends, but nobody knows. Who am I to believe in love? Love ain't no stranger. I looked around, and what did I see? Broken-hearted people staring at me, all searching 'cause they still believe. Love ain't no stranger.
Style.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite solos of all time. Love that fucking solo. And I love that song. It's a great song.
Oh, I do too. And I would have picked some off the 87 record, but that's kind of,
everyone picks that.
Like you said, straight down the line.
Obviously, yeah, still
in there. And you think about Whitesnake, they're one of those bands that they came out and their early stuff just didn't take off. And you go back and listen to it and you're like, even it's like, and I compare it to like early Cheap Trick stuff before they kind of found their own sound and stuff.
Yeah.
It's lame.
Yeah.
It's like, or like early, some of the early Priests.
Oh, sure.
And
were more like blues rockers, right?
Yeah. And then I don't think Whitesnake really hit their stride until probably Slide It In when he got Sykes. Yeah,
definitely.
To get more powerful sound.
All right. And that's the thing. So this was after Sykes was in Thin Lizzy?
Yeah, he was in Thin Lizzy.
So he's still kind of writing in sort of a Thin Lizzy-ish kind of way, right? Yeah. I mean, that's sort of his style. Just kind of an old school rock, but then it's like once he got to the self-titled Whitesnake, all of a sudden he cranked up the distortion and got real heavy.
Well, you know what's interesting? If you go back and listen to some like Thunder and Lightning by Lizzy, he was doing some heavy shit there.
Mm, cool.
But then he got to Whitesnake and he toned it down for the Slide It In record, and then after that it got heavy.
Yeah, like Cold Sweat or something. Maybe that's like a heavier
Cold
tune,
Sweat was dun dun dun. Da na 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 na. And you hear the slides going and everything. I've got to multi-layer me slides, right?
That is pretty classic shit, man.
Oh, yeah.
Well, So what are we talking about over here?
Well, I tell you what.
What's in store for the kids?
We got a short show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, short in Genghis and Ragman talk.
Well, the thing is, what happens is we kind of get behind because we go on a sabbatical and we got to sort of clean up things and get things back up to speed.
House cleaning, yeah.
We apologize, but we've been doing it this way for years, unfortunately. I mean, we got shit going on, and without making too many excuses, we just want to make good on the people that were cool enough to talk to us and give them the spotlight instead of us running our fucking mouths.
They're fucking dope.
So, who are we listening to tonight?
Well, we got a couple of interviews coming your way. Mm-hmm. The first one's going to be with Lars Johansson from Fatmo Mac.
Oh, yeah.
And Lars was fucking awesome to talk to.
I know.
Good guy. And his, what a great record.
I was going to say, that album's really good, isn't it?
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. Kind of a bluesy thing, kind of a step away from what his day job.
Mm-hmm. How would you characterize it? Is it? You wouldn't go like swamp rock.
Right. No.
Not that kind of a bluesy.
Kind of
southern bluesy.
Heavy, muddy blues type thing.
Oh, okay. I can dig that.
And I got to say, man, this is one of those ones that I was just kind of taken away by, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And you look at the cover's kind of interesting, and
it looks kind of grungy, like we're going to go, this is going to be some dirty shit, but you're going to love it. And it's guitar-oriented, obviously, because it's a picture of it, like a real grungy guitar. So that always says a lot.
And you know what? I kind of stayed away for a little while just saying, well,
going to be some generic butt rock or something. But it turned out to be some badass shit.
Oh, totally, man. And I was like...
Those are almost the more fun when you're surprised by it, like really pleasantly surprised and just kind of like, holy fuck, I'm really into this. You know, when you had no idea what to expect. That's always, I think, a real treat.
Oh, totally, man.
And it's kind of a biz.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%, man. And, you know, Lars is best known for his guitar work with Candlemass.
Mm-hmm.
So...
There's a lot of dudes doing that where they're in these traditional sort of European metal bands, almost kind of a power metal thing or whatever. And then all of a sudden they do like an album that's just like out of left field. And it's not just, I kind of like this kind of music, I'm going to do some covers of songs I've always liked to pay homage. It's no, I actually kind of think this way and write this way, and it sounds authentic, like from that period, without it being a retro copy. It's like they just write that way, and it sounds so fucking authentic and earnest. You're just like, holy fuck, you guys sound amazing.
Yeah.
You would never associate them with this other band that they're from. It's like they're night and day.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, how do you do that? You know what I mean? Most people, they sit down and write, and they just only know how to write one way. But these guys are like, no, I can write this way, I can write that way. It's just what I do. I've always just been impressed with that shit. I'm lucky if I can remember two fucking things at once.
Oh, I know, man. And in the interview, you'll kind of get into what his thought process was by putting this band together and this record together. And I got to tell you, man, it just kind of took me by surprise. And I even told him that. I said, you know, I didn't know who y'all were or what this was. Mm-hmm. You know, I know Cathedral or Candlemass, but you know, I don't know a lot about other than that. You know, that's it.
Mm-hmm. When they mentioned it to me, I said, "Fuck those guys."
Well, you know another
but
thing.
But now I figure,
go fuck yourself. You know, Matt Slevin on vocals too.
Oh, nice.
You know, and I'm a fan of his from some of the Inbase stuff back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know what? I'll check this out. And then I ended up falling in love with the record. It's really got a Zeppelin vibe to it. So it's a real kind of bluesy, Zeppelin-y type record.
Nice.
So I think a lot of people dig it, man. So tell you what, we'll let you hear our chat with Lars Johansson, Fatmo Mac.
Hi there, this is Lars Johansson from Fatmo Mac. Checking out Genghis and Ragman and the Horns Are Out.
Searching my soul.
All right, guys, you're on live with Ragman Mono E Mono with Lars Johansson from Fat Momac. Lars, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Hey, I gotta commend you on your new project. I know most of the fans out there know you from Candlemass, but you have this exciting new project called Fat Momac. Can you kind of tell us how this project came together for you and who joined you for the ride?
Well, actually, this is the kind of music I grew up with, and the reason I started to play guitar, you know, Hendrix, Mountain, Cream, and stuff like that. Later on, Black Sabbath and all that came along and turned me into heavier music. And I had this riff going on in my head for a while until my wife told me that I should do something about it. So I booked a studio and called up my friends that I knew were from different they play different kinds of music, and I figured that would be a nice palette to bring them together to do this. So actually, we never rehearsed or anything. I just booked the Polar Studio, since the mixing guy, Leonard, has done both Genesis, Led Zeppelin, and ABBA. He had the 70s sound in his blood, so I figured that would be the right man to do this. We recorded it live with my rhythm guitar and the drums through the whole thing, and I said we'd do three takes of every song. We keep the best version, and then we just add vocals, bass, and lead guitar later on, and that is how it's done. Pretty basic, pretty 70s style.
Well, you know what? It definitely takes you back to that 70s sound with, you know, a fresh sound to it. It doesn't sound dated at all. But, man, I hear Zeppelin, I hear Mountain, I hear lots of influence on this record, and it really came out, which is really cool because, I mean, you're known for more of a doom metal type of sound, and for you to come out with someone like this, have you surprised a lot of your friends and fans with this project so far?
Well, I mean, either you like good, I mean, I listen to myself to different kinds of music. If there are good musicians and good productions, I go for it. And maybe I confuse some, it goes both ways. Either you like it or either you think, what the fuck is he doing now? You know? Was catching a kind of an old man rock and roll. Are you going to live on a veranda with a Dobro guitar? No. This is just me cleaning my head and getting room for more stuff of this kind of music.
Well, before we jump into the record, I got to ask you the name of the band, Fat Momac. What does that mean? How did you come up with that? Can you give us a little story of how you came up with the name of the band?
Actually, some people think that the name of the band is crazy as well, and I figured, well, I don't care. It sounds good in my mouth, and I can like it when I see it written all down. And it originally comes from a mountain up north in Sweden called Fat Momac, and a lot of the people that are in this project are coming from up north in Sweden, including myself. So I figured I just fiddle around with the name and put some dots in between. I looked at it looked like a rap band, but I didn't care. So I just added my James Tressart guitar on the cover album, and I saw the text and I said, well, there we go. This is the way it's going to be.
Well, that's cool, man. Because when I saw the name of the band, I was like, cool. I mean, actually, another thing I want to compliment you on is I really like the cover with the guitar that looks like it's been through a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, you know, it's a cool cover. It really kind of catches your eye. And then you're like, Fat Momac, what the hell is this? And then, you know, you see some name recognition, you know, a guy like Matt Slevin. You know, I know him and I know you. And I'm like, wow, I got to check this out. This is going to be very interesting. And then I hear it's bluesy. I'm like, wow, even better, you know. So congratulations. This is a really cool project you put together. Well, and again, before we jump to the interview, is this a project or is this, you know, a full-time band that you're going to, you know, start touring with and recording on a fairly regular basis?
Actually, to begin with, I started out to work with these songs, and I did it, put it all together, and I spoke to my old guitar buddy that I played guitar with when I was young, Roger, and he was just a part of the project for three songs, and he suddenly passed away in a heart attack. So another guitar player, also up from North, Klaus, jumped in and filled his spots play, and we didn't even discuss at that time, because I shut down the project for more than a year, because it really, really shattered my world. And when the mixing guy Leonard from Polar Studios called me up and said that you should do something about this, because this is good music, I don't want to delete this. I put the shit together again, and we recorded it, finished it, and now when people seem to like it, well, there's more material. I can easily do more of this stuff, and if everybody can put their schedules together, we will, of course, do gigs with this, probably at blues festivals, maybe not on metal festivals.
Mm-hmm. I could see, you know, some of the festivals are doing, you know, overseas even, I could see this fitting in. It's heavy enough to fit in, but I mean, you know, you almost think that you could even be on a bill with some more classic bands, you know, as well, if there's some more classic bands doing some shows. I mean, I wish this something like this would come over to the States, because I would really like to see this music performed live, because I'm really getting into this CD.
I'm very glad to hear that it works so well. And as I said, it seems to have fallen in good ground, especially in the U.S. And, well, you guys like this kind of music. Well, I have my email address. Maybe I can come over and do some gigs with this.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome, because if you think about it, Lars, a lot of this, I mean, if this gets the proper airplay, a lot of this is just rooted in American, you know, blues rock from the 70s. I mean, take out Zeppelin, I mean, English. So say English and American blues, because I hear like ZZ Top even in some stuff, like the instrumental kickback. I thought it kind of had a little bit of a ZZ Top feel to it, and I'm really digging on that instrumental.
I agree.
Well, you know, another track I'm really getting into, and this one to me had kind of a bluesier Led Zeppelin feel to it, is So Bad It Feels. To me, that's got, it, you know, I heard the opening riff, I'm like, I'm thinking Zeppelin. Did you, when you put that song together, I don't know if you had ideas of these bands, or if it's just the way it came back with, out with, you know, your influences and so forth, but do you hear that? Am I on the right path, or am I out in left field?
Thank you.
No. Actually, I think the production and the way that the Matt is singing makes your head turn a little to the Led Zeppelin thing. And maybe when I do the slide solo, I do the slide solo in that song, and Roger is doing the other ordinary guitar solo straight after. I had a slight Jimmy Page touch in my head because of the sound mostly.
Well, let me ask you, Lars, when you're putting these songs together, how do you write these songs? Did you come in with a riff and you jam it out with some other guys, or did you have more complete ideas? I guess, like you said, you recorded some of this stuff with just a drum track and the guitars, and you went three times. How do you put your music together? Are you just kind of just riffing, and or do you work with others, or you pretty much write it on your own?
I'm doing the riffs at home, and I'm putting it together to decent songs. So it's like to 70% finished, and then I let it come alive with the drummer. Okay, the other musicians are also in the studio and playing with. But since it's a live take, we retake the bass and the other guitars, because it's only my guitar and the drums that are important in the first take, sort of. And when that ground is done, I write some lyrics, maybe the first verse, and come out with some melody lines. And then for this example, I told Matt that you can take this and you can work on it, or you can do throw it in the trash can and do whatever you like. And he's like a mix. That's why it's so cool, because everybody's own heart and soul came out. Because like I said, if you've been playing your instrument or singing for 20 years, you know when you're wrong, when you're on the wrong path. So I was just telling everybody to do your thing, don't interfere, just close your eyes and play your stuff. I will go out and have a pizza while you're recording, and when I get back, you're probably done. And it's been very relaxed recording, you know, no click tracks, nothing whatsoever.
And I think that's what makes this record so special. And I've talked to some other guys recently where they've kind of gone back into not doing the, you know, modern age stuff where you're mailing files and back and forth, and I think you lose that organic type sound. Like we talked to Udo Dirkschneider not too long ago, and he said the last record they did, Decadent, that it was the first time in a while they'd all gotten in the studio and recorded together, and he thought that's why that record was so much better. And I really think it. I think a lot of guys have gotten away from, hey, we're a band, let's get this studio and let's jam it out and record some music rather than just do the file sharing. What are your thoughts on, you know, do you agree with me? Do you think you get a more organic take when everybody's there rather than you guys mailing stuff through the internet?
Well, that's the way we do it with Camel Mass. We all hang out in the studio and we record, and you know, when I've done my channels, well, then I can go home or something. Well, I can also be there. But the important thing is that we will hang around in the studio. We don't send files from our. I would never record my guitar in the kitchen and send it over email for someone to put it together. I've been in played in another project called Project Hate, and that guy he's got a whole thing set up at home. And then it's a different thing. He's like this Sweden's version of Rob Zombie, you know. He's a demon producer at home, and that worked out in that project because that music is so heavy, you can work with that. Mm-hmm. But this was another thing. This was supposed to be getting me back to my roots, and we were just kicking back in the studio and recording it. And, okay, is that a good take? Yeah, well, it's mostly done on the first take, everything.
Oh, that is awesome. That's awesome. I know the guys in Opeth. I had heard, I guess, on the last couple of their records, they'd all gotten in the studio and did everything on analog tape like back in the day. You didn't go that crazy, did you, with the analog, or was it, you know, more, you know, digital type recording in the studio?
No, the thing is, the secrecy behind the actually mixing production is that Leonard, that owns the Polar Studio, has the old mixing desk from the 70s still.
Oh, nice.
It's all tubes in it, you know, like compressors, like a big, like three toasters and stuff. It's fucking 80 degrees. It's steaming all over in the corner, but that's the compressor for the bass. Okay, you twist around and around. Okay, you will record it down on a hard disk, not on tapes. But I mean, the actually the mixing console and everything, it's old stuff and it's working perfectly. It gives you that warm sound that you sometimes you lose when you get totally digital, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, jumping back into the record, another track I wanted to bring up was Cold Woman. I really like that track, and that one, to me, kind of has a Stevie Ray Vaughan type feel to it. How did that track come together for you?
I didn't have him in mind until I put on my... I'm doing the first two solos, and the guy Roger is doing the outro solo. And when I heard the sound that came out with the guitar, it sounded a little bit like Steve Ray Vaughan. I figured, well, then maybe I should play something that reminds about that style. And then when he put the vocals on and all that, it came out with a little twist of Hendrix and Steve Ray Vaughan. It wasn't intentional. That is also what this record just, it sounds like it came out when we recorded it and how people felt at the very moment, which is for me very, very exciting.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And that's what makes a good, solid record. I agree with you 100%. And back to you mentioning Matt, I don't think you could have picked a better vocalist to come in and sing these tracks for you, because, man, he does an amazing job as well.
Oh, yes. He was a little skeptical, though, when I mentioned it at first time, because he said, well, I'm a hard rock singer. And what I said, Matt, just imagine that you have a terrible hangover at 4 o'clock in the morning and you just go up and sing. This is where it all came from. You give it a try. And when he did that, I said, well, I told you so.
You should have said, here's a couple of Zeppelin records. Go check them out, buddy. That's funny. That's funny. Let me ask you this. Is there a track on the record that you're exceptionally happy with, the way it came out?
Actually, the song number 5, which is kind of Rycuder inspired with this swamp slide thing. I never knew that it could sound like that, because the mixing guy told me it's very macho to play slide. Don't ever forget that.
Well, it's awesome.
So I figured that is cool. Also, Memories is all there is. It's a song that is close to me, because I was thinking of Roger when I wrote the lyrics from that one. Memories, that all the fun we had when we were young and behaving like morons, but that are things that you can remember now these days.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if that track had some sentimental value with Roger passing. you know, during the recording of the project there. And I'm so glad that you were forced to, after you took some time off, that you were forced to kind of get back in. It's probably what he would have wanted, and I think he'd be really happy with the end product.
Oh, yes, I know he would have loved it. I mean, the album I also wrote that I dedicated to him and all that. So that's a, I knew that he, if he had been alive and been on the whole album, he would have been totally overjoyed.
Well, it's a great record. Congratulations. Well, you know, what's next for you, Lars? Now that the record's out, you said there's a possibility if everybody can be in the same place at the same time, do a little touring, or, you know, I'd read some reports that, you know, Candlemass was kind of on hiatus. Is it still on hiatus, or, you know, what's going on for you currently?
The thing is that around the last Christmas here, we had a big meeting because Leif wasn't feeling too well, and he couldn't cope up with traveling and all that, so he was... We said it would be a shame to put the band on ice until we feel better. So we're doing like 16, 17 festivals in this year now without him. Sometimes with Per, the old keyboard player from Opeth that plays with us now, and sometimes with another guy called Jürgen who played in Crux and also in Tomb before that. So it's like close family members try to keep the shit together, kind of. And if Leif feels fine, he can join in whatever gig he wants to. So there's no hard feelings or anything like that. We just want to keep the fire burning, you know.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Well, good luck with those festivals. I know they're coming just right around the corner here.
Oh, yeah. We've done three or four of them already here in Sweden.
Oh, wow. What are your thoughts? Are y'all looking to do some new material, you know, in the future? Or
Well, if he feels a little better here in the future, maybe he can get his thoughts back in place, and maybe he'll do some new songs. There's nothing, we don't want to push anything, since Canvas is, for me, now in the best constellation of people, and the chemistry is good and all that, and now if this Fatma Mac thing turns out to be good, I have to book some festivals for that as well.
Oh yeah, hey man, it sounds like you'll be busy. That's a good thing.
Yeah, you have to spin while the wheel is hot, or what do you say?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, strike while the iron's hot, so to speak. Well, Lars, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans?
Well, I suggest that they buy themselves a crate of beer and check out the album.
I agree. Hey, since you mentioned beer, that's part of our thing on the show is we drink lots of good imported and craft beers. Is there a favorite beer that you like to enjoy in Sweden on a warm evening, if there's many of those?
Well, I have to be perfectly honest with you. I can only drink whiskey, vodka, red wine, or champagne because I am allergic to beer.
Oh, wow. Oh, man, I'm so sorry for you.
Yeah, I was sorry. It was 15 years since I had a cold beer because if I drink two beers, I get more headache than you can actually believe. I think it's something with the stuff you make it up. It doesn't matter if I drink 20 or 2. It just stops and my head starts to ache immediately.
Oh, man, maybe it's a wheat, barley, or something in there that just doesn't agree with you. That's a bad allergy to have.
Yeah, but it works on whiskey, though, and I don't understand that. And there's no reason to feel sorry for me.
There you go. Well, Lars, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com, and we want to tell all the fans to go check out Fatmo Mac. It is a great heavy blues record, and you will not be sorry. This thing is awesome. Lars, thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, and good luck on the festivals, and if Fatmo Mac can come to the States, we're going to come find you.
Thank you, Alan. I will bring my slide, and I will do my best.
All right, brother. I'll have a, hey, if I see you, you can have a whiskey, and I'll have a beer, and we'll chat.
That would be just great, Alan. We will do that.
distant past, my friend. Life is short, and soon it ends. All alone and on your own. Spin around in life's big pond. Memories is all we have for the things we did so young. Once you're there and so aware, that's all that's left in me.
Interview. Yeah, nice guy.
What a nice guy, right?
For sure. Those are always the best kind. The guys are just like, they knock out this kind of stuff and you get to talk to them. You think they're going to be like, yeah, well, you know, that's just what I do, bro. No, but they're just like, dude, thanks for listening to the music and I really appreciate it. They just sound like really nice, earnest dudes, man.
Well, I think, you know, I kind of mentioned to him that, you know, I've been jamming to it and we kind of have this ritual on Sundays from time to time. We got a cat that lives outside. And I'll bring CDs out there, and I'll drink beer. White people have a little bit of wine. The middle munchkin will have...
And chat with the cat.
She'll have some straight-up whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
No. She'll have whatever she's having, Coke or water or whatever.
So, lemonade.
And then, you know, we're petting the cat, we're talking, and I'm fucking jamming with the music. And I brought that CD out there, and I had to go play it over and over and over again. I'm like, wow, what a like, great record. Oh, you know, everybody's so oblivious to what I'm up to.
Uh-huh.
With that kind of
but
stuff.
But the cat's looking at you like, nice.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like,
you did good, kid.
I was like, this is weird. The cat's giving me the thumbs up.
Exactly.
So who we got next up?
Well, we got a band called, a brand new band called Diamond Lane.
Nice.
And you and I were pretty much blown away by these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Because we got to listen to it. The night that we're going to interview the guy, we're like, who are these guys? You know,
who the fuck are you?
We're not ready for this.
We're not ready for this.
We're not worried.
Freaked us the fuck out.
And we put it on, and we were blown away by this group. Oh, I mean, yeah. They kind of have that 80s sound of like Guns N' Roses meets Skid Row. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, totally. And I love that kind of... I don't mind... I used to be against the retro thing. Mm-hmm. I saw it as just a quick sort of... bullshit cash grab, you know, trading on people's nostalgia for a quick buck, and it annoyed me. It actually offended me. But I've listened to enough bands now that were, you can tell they're not into it. I mean, yeah, they're paying homage and they really believe in it, but they're not doing it just to make money. They're doing it because it's like, this is something that's really a part of my how I got into music in the first place, and right. It's part of, you know, my sort of makeup as a rock guy. Yeah, I may do this other stuff, but this is so much a part of my history that I really fucking dig this stuff, and I want to give that a voice to it. And so they do it, and the earnestness is what I like. I was like, yeah. I can tell you guys mean it, you know what I mean, and you guys are living this shit, and that I like. And there's been a lot of those bands coming out that it really helped take that nasty taste out of my mouth about sure. A lot of this retro shit, and I don't shun it. Whenever I see a new retro band, I just kind of go, let's hear them, see what they're like. I wrote a review recently about this band Lucifer by this chick Johanna Sardanis, I think is how your name. She did an EP with this other girl, The Oath. They were real good, very occultish vibe to it. Old school retro sound, but they're fucking badass, dude.
Really?
They sound great, and so. They were going to make a band out of it, and then the other chick ended up dropping out, so she was forced to just go do something else. She started.
I want to be a stay-at-home mom. I want to start a brownie business.
So she, but she dropped out, so she's like, what am I going to do? So she just started another band.
Yeah.
It's become almost like the same thing, but just a new name. Lucifer got a bunch of dudes together. That fucking album is badass, dude. Four horns up, Holmes.
Nice, Holmes.
It's a killer fucking album.
Well, it's Lucifer.
So he's pulling the strings. The fix is in. No, but it's good.
I will command you to give me four. Rocketh up. Rocketh out.
No, it's actually really good shit, so you guys ought to dig it. But in any case, I'm looking forward to this interview. This is a bunch of good guys. You're going
to
dig them.
Oh, yeah. So we talked to Brandon Bowman. Really, really cool guy. And a really cool band. So I hope you guys dig it. Here's a little bit of a new band for you. Or actually two new bands for you tonight for the price of one.
It's like a deal. You're making out like bandits.
We're going to get sued. You know that, right?
He'll be in here quick.
Guys, it's Nate.
Whatever. We don't even care.
So the horse is out of the barn.
Here's some Diamond Lane. Check it out, guys.
This is Brandon Bauman from Diamond Lane. You're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up!
Vote of confidence.
Let me ask you, influences. I mean, I hear a late 80s influence, maybe a Skid Row type vibe going, but mixed with some other stuff, as well as, you know, keeping a good, current, fresh sound. Who are some of you guys' influences?
Well, that's the funny thing. All of us, every member of the band, we're all very much hard rock and heavy metal fans, spanning all decades, all eras. We got a couple of guys who were, Black Sabbath freaks, and then there's the Pantera and the Ozzy and the Metallica. I mean, we love it all. So I think we kind of draw from all sides of the coin and really just try to emote, what feels good to us, because there's nothing new, but there's always different combinations. So, if you take a sprinkle of the Pantera vibe and add some of that Skid Row flavor and get some of the Ozzy in there, I mean, you're covering all the gambits and giving people what they love about the genre.
And that's cool. And you guys are definitely keeping it fresh with in all these influences and everything as well. Because it was kind of funny when we were listening to you while we were cooking this evening, it was like, Gang was like, "Do you hear some Dangerous Toys?" I said, "Dude, I kind of hear some Skid Row." And then we were kind of bouncing stuff off because, old school metal guys like yourself, when you hear a band, you're like, okay, what would you compare that to when you're trying to describe it? But the cool thing about a band like yourself is it doesn't sound dated. It's just really good melodic hard rock with, you know, kind of a metal tinge to it, you know?
Well, fantastic. I'm really glad it comes along and comes across like that because, you know, like I said, we just want to tap into what feels good to us, you know, because that's the only thing that's going to win. I mean, you can't chase a trend. You can't try to replicate something that's already been done. So, you know, taking inspiration from across the board, I think you're bound to have some new, unique, fresh results.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. You guys start off, I guess your first record was World Without Heroes, and then you had an EP that came out. It looked like, I guess 2 years later, it was Sapphire, and now you got Terrorizer. To be honest, Terrorizer is the first time I heard you guys. How did World Without Heroes differ from Terrorizer?
Well, greatly. So Jared Reese and I, we have been doing this thing since we were kids. Like anybody else, you start it in your parents' garage, you go through the ropes, you go through the ringers, you figure out what works, you figure out what doesn't work, and eventually we found ourselves going, you know, we've been at this for a couple of years, the demo years, I like to call them. Let's pack it up. Let's move to Los Angeles. Let's find the guys. Let's find the team. Let's really take this thing to the next level. So we moved down to Los Angeles in January of 2009. We ended up getting linked up with our producer, Tom Chandler, who we worked with on all of those albums. And to really hone in and find our sound and start to create our identity, we wrote 50-some-odd songs. We shaved it down to the 10 that you hear on World Without Heroes. And then we just kept growing, kept exploring, kept challenging ourselves to really want to raise the bar and be the absolute best band that we can be. So with Terrorizer, kind of a culmination of all those years of hard work, putting together the team where it all just clicked. And that album, we wrote together. We played it live in the studio, so we were able to feed off each other's vibes and energy. And it really just kind of cemented a nice process for us in how we approach our songwriting. And I'm glad it came across so strongly because people have been digging Terrorizer, and we can't wait to get back into the studio and raise the bar even higher.
That makes sense, though. I guess you guys, even though a lot of the guys we listen to now, even guys that are like people that had bands that they started 20-something years ago, well-established bands, they now have sort of accepted that to a great extent, you know, you got people all over the world playing all over the world. You can't necessarily be in the studio together like they used to, so they're used to sending digital files back and forth. You know, we're in a digital age. So you guys have sort of shed that idea and said, no, we want to get that old-school feeling of being right there, getting a synergy with the guys in the room and making music that way. Was that, it was a conscious effort to do that then?
100%, 100%, because, you know, it's easy to get sucked in, particularly with where technology is now, to, you know, oh, I'm going to lay down this riff, and then I'm going to add. Next thing you know, you're stacking 100 layers on top, and you're losing that vibe, that essence, that ebb and that flow. So for us to go in there and be able to break it down bare bones, and really have the bass and the drums locking in and us, you know, really feeling the transitions together and, you know, adding the spice and the flavor where necessary, I think that has tangible results.
Perfect. Well, I guess it sounds like you guys kind of had an organic approach to both records. With this new one, with Terrorizer, you said you raised the bar. Was there anything going in where you said, let's do something a little bit different, or was it, let's, you know, we got a winning formula, let's stick with what we got?
Well, cut and dry, the addition of Dave Van Diggity, that changed everything. Now we have our family. The members are locked in because, you know, like most fans, I think, you know, a big cross to bear is finding the right team, the people who believe the same things, have the same long-term vision, the same work ethic, and who are willing to make the sacrifices necessary to achieve those goals. So once we brought him into the fold, we didn't have any question or doubt in any position in the band. So we really got cemented in and were able to explore those liberties and start to trust and rely on each other. So I think that mindset alone shifted the way that we did things. And instead of trying to chase something, we wanted to do what felt good to us. Because, you know, we live with these songs, we play these songs, and the way that we're going to extract something so precious and something that will last and sustain is to do it honestly. Because us as five individuals, there's only one of each of us. So our combination together is inherently unique. So why try to chase something that's already been done or try to sound like someone that already exists? Because then you're just shunning your own uniqueness. And that's what's going to win in this world of a million bands vying for the little time and attention that people have.
Nice. So when you, I remember you said that you, when you were writing, you guys wrote a whole bunch of songs, as opposed to maybe like one other way of doing it is, let's take one song at a time, let's really, you know, workshop this thing until we got this thing perfect. You kind of, I guess, almost like a stream of consciousness, not to, you know, say that you weren't putting everything into it, but just kind of throwing stuff out there, seeing what you got, and then maybe you were picking and choosing from what you had out, down to narrow it down to what made it to the album. Is that how you did it?
Absolutely. I think you want to kind of roll with the vibe and strike while the iron's hot. You know, Paul Stanley always says, capture emotion, not perfection. Because it's easy to get sucked into the one song at a time and, oh, I want to make this a masterpiece. And then next thing you know, you have 10 really cool songs, but maybe they don't feel like they belong together. They're not from the same school. They're not riding on the same bus. So I think by attacking it all at once and letting it flow, you know, oh, how these riffs work together and this song and that song and all just embracing those moments and that energy, that's how you get that cohesive feel.
Nice. Well, that's cool. Well, another thing I find interesting about you guys, just reading a little bit in your bio here, is, you know, you guys were hitting the Sunset Strip, selling out clubs in an era where, I mean, your style of music, you would think it'd be a lot tougher than that, but I mean, your songs, I mean, it's evident on Terrorizer, you guys can write, you can play, and you can sing. You know, you write good music. You know, how difficult was that? I mean, because it looks like after that, you hit the strip pretty hard for a couple of years, and you get affiliated with Fox. So, you know, kind of, if you don't mind, take us back a little bit. When you guys got together and said, okay, we're going to start playing, you start getting gigs, and then all of a sudden, it's almost like that Motley Crue thing where you're selling out every night.
Well, for us, it's really grassroots. And by that, it's about hitting the streets and making connections with people, having a real human connection. You know, in this day and age, people like to sit online. They think posting a few flyers on Facebook and updating the website is enough. That's just one small sliver of the puzzle. Because at the end of the day, we're in a blessed position to be on the other side of the stage. If we weren't up there, we'd be where the audience is. We're all one and the same, music lovers, music believers, people who want to go out and find a little escapism to shed the constraints of their daily lives and the things that weigh them down and just revel and have a good time. So with that approach in mind, we kind of have the philosophy of meeting new people, establishing relationships that sustain longer than just getting somebody out to a show. It's not just about putting asses in the seats, but bringing people into the family. We're all like-minded individuals who believe the same things, so why not have a community of that? And that's kind of been our mentality. So hitting the streets, going out to the bars, meeting people, it's not work, it's fun, you know? Just everyone's got a different story and a different approach and a different vibe, and when you throw all those in the pot, man, you got a spicy meatball.
Well, that's interesting, because what you're saying is it sounds like in today's day and age, it's easy for us to assume as fans that, oh, well, it's easier than ever. You got YouTube, you got, you know, Vine, you've got Twitter. I mean, there's so many different ways that you've got a studio in your pocket, and you can just make music anywhere, get it out to the world for next to nothing, and become famous overnight. But you guys are saying, you know, no, it's not like that. We went grassroots, we went door to door, and we sold ourselves to every single person out there in the audience, one guy at a time, night after night. And so it's interesting, that dichotomy. You know, it's like it's easier than ever, but it almost kind of makes it harder than ever. Like, you got to try harder than you ever did back in the day. It's not as everything's been done, like you said, and it's almost like you have to prove yourself doubly, you know, over the guys that already had to prove themselves.
Without a doubt. I mean, especially because people are buying likes, buying views, inflated numbers, inflated perception. But when it all boils down, you know, are the people coming to the show? And not only are they coming to the show, but are they there because they want to be there? I mean, it's really painful to see shows that are filled with people out of obligation because, oh, yeah, I'm going to do a favor for, you know, so-and-so's boyfriend, you know, however it boils down, and they're just there. They're present. Having people present and having people there because they're fired up and they want to rock, those are different worlds. So for us to seek out the people who want to be there, who could really benefit from being there, that's what we're after. We're after the people just like us. And the internet, yes, it does make it tougher, but it also makes it easier because of access. You know, very much a catch-22, very much a double-edged sword. So I think all avenues need to be explored and appreciated. I mean, we take the responsibility very seriously. And, you know, we want to meet new people and add them to the Diamond Lane family.
Awesome. Well, I guess that's how you guys ended up getting affiliated with Fox and getting played on Fox, which I think is pretty freaking awesome. As far as the Fox, have you guys done anything with any other sort of, like, film or TV as far as lending your music to it?
Nothing as notable as that quite yet. You know, of course, there's always a million things on the back burner, things in work, conversations being had. But that nod that we got from Fox to be their Artist of the Month, where they were featuring our songs in their national campaign for All Sporting, it was really exciting to get exposed to new audiences who didn't even know we existed. So for them to have a vote of confidence in us and give us an opportunity to do that, we were the first unsigned band in the history of the Artist of the Month program to be featured in that spot. The guy who was before us, the Artist of the Month, was Bruce Springsteen.
Wow. So,
you know, for us to, you know, have that platform, you know, to share our voice, that was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously we got a great relationship there, and we're going to be exploring other opportunities with them in 2015 and the new material. So that was definitely a great validating point of the hard work that we've been putting in, and, you know, is only a motivator to continue to want to work harder and reach higher.
Well, before we jump into the record, I just got a question. I'm just curious here. You know, when something like that happens, you're unsigned, you get this big break, does it go to your head at all, or does it make you hungrier?
No, it makes you hungrier. I mean, anybody who lets it go to their head is just an asshole. I mean, I'm not here to stroke my own ego, because I know there's always somebody who's working 10 times harder than me, and that's why it's important to be a student of the game. There's always something new to learn. The second you think you know it all, that's the second your days are numbered.
Oh, yeah, totally. And if you think about at some of the 80s bands where these guys were the one-hit wonders and their heads swole up to the moon, and then a sophomore record came out that sucked ass, and it's like, oh, shit, they went back down to earth pretty quick. And then it was a really tough journey to get back up. And I don't want to knock the band, but I'll mention it, Quiet Riot. Kevin DeBro's head got so big, I guess all his hair fell out. That's when he started wearing wigs. Oh, rib shot. No, I have no hair, so I can say that. But
fair enough.
But, yeah, no, I think it's cool that you're hungry, and an opportunity like that is like, holy shit, guys, this is it. Let's keep our heads straight. I'd steal something from Paul Stanley again. Buckle up, boys. The roller coaster is about to take off. You know, that type of thing.
That's straight up. We have a philosophy in Diamond Lane. Work hard, stay humble. That's the measure of true success. No matter what things that you achieve and how far and wide you can take your music, keep your feet planted on the ground because that's where they belong.
Perfect, man. Well, let's jump into the record Terrorizer. Again, we were talking about it before we even started the interview. Genghis and I were just exposed to you and both blown away, you know, together. And what a great record. And I like to bring up tracks and talk about some of the tracks on the record that I really dig. And I don't typically do this, but the first track, or not the first track, actually, it is the first track because my media player on my computer screwed up, was Drift. The ballad. Dude, that thing is... I heard that, I'm like, wow. Wow. I can't wait to hear the other tracks. What a great tune, dude. How did that tune come together for you?
Thank you. think it's time to go. Something deep inside tells me I'm alone. Hard to travel down the road beneath my feet.
Because, you know, we had a great collection of songs, and we knew that we needed to present a different shade while still holding that rock torch, so to speak. So that came together very naturally. I mean, even in the demoing phases, we had those nuts and bolts. Frankie just started strumming those chords at rehearsal, and I just, you know, jumped on the mic, started singing this melody, you know, while everybody's setting up or whatever, and just recorded it, you know, on our phone. Didn't really think much of it until we were in the studio crafting, and then just kind of the light bulb went off. Aha! Here's an opportunity to show a different shade of Diamond Lane while still holding on to the reins, so to speak. And so it was exciting for us to do that because that's not something we would normally explore.
Well, is it, I guess that could be a very kind of rewarding type vibe too, when you're like, holy shit, I don't know if we could do this, but we did it, and it's awesome. You know?
Yeah, you just see people's reactions, and, you know, just like you guys, that they dig the song. You know, hey, that's important for us, and nice to hear, you know, our risk-taking validated, so to speak.
There you go. Well, actually, the first track on the album, The Enemy, is another just really strong killer tune, and that was the one where I said, you know what, that's kind of got, to me, has a little bit of a Skid Row type vibe with a modern edge to it, you know, a fresh sound, you know.
Sure.
How did The Enemy come together?
You know, The Enemy was the very first song that we recorded for that album. So when we're in the studio, we're getting set up and, you know, checking mics and levels and drums. You know, from the other room, I hear, you know, Frankie playing the little acoustic guitar lick. I'm like, oh, that, you know, so I kind of poke my head out into the hallway and, you know, just kind of observe him and Jarrett going back and forth for a few minutes there. And he goes, oh, dude, I got the perfect next little riff. You know, launches into the main riff. And I'm thinking, we got something cooking right here. Let's get in there and lay it down. So we just crammed into the room and fleshed that bad Oscar out. You know, next thing you know, it was wrapped. So that was very exciting and a great, good foot to start the pace of the new recording session.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting thing to me, and we talk about it quite a bit on the show, is track listing and how you put these songs together. And what a great track to open the record, kind of hit you in the face a little bit, let you know there's some attitude rolling.
Did it take you guys a while to put these tracks in order, or how did that come together for you?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, when you're looking at the body of work, it almost kind of puts itself together. There were maybe a couple of songs that we tried different sequencing, but for the most part, they all kind of fell into place. We knew we wanted to close with Drift because, you know, you can't really stick that in the middle because it almost resets. So we wanted, you know, the goal of the CD is you put it in your car, and by the time you arrive to your job at work, the disc is done. So you just have 40 minutes right there, starting your day, ending your day, however you want to lay it out. But it almost kind of takes you on a little journey, and to end with Drift, you know, that's just the culmination of the storm you just powered through.
Totally, man, totally. Well, another killer one is that I'm really digging is Cheating Death, which is another just really good rocker, man. How did that one come together for you?
You know, it all just, you know, started with the, just that main riff and Ray just chugging down on the bass. I mean, that was just, you know, one of those things that was just fun to jam on. And, you know, I think maybe, you know, Jarrett spouted out the words Cheating Death and, you know, just you could see our eyes light up and, oh, you know, this is a great, great point to roll with here. So, you know, again, another one of those tracks that came together pretty quickly.
When it comes to lyric writing, do you guys have ideas, any sort of ideas, first of all, going into it, like sort of a theme, what you're talking about before you even start writing the music? Or is that just after the music's done, you go, okay, this seems like something the words could fit in? Or do you keep like a notebook of the thoughts that you have at the ready?
I mean, we're always writing all day, every day. You know, individually, we got just notebooks on notebooks. But, you know, I would say no two songs are written alike. Sometimes, you know, you just put up the lightning rod and let it speak to you. And sometimes it's a little more meticulously crafted, if you will. Sometimes you have a phrase or, you know, hey, I got a great set of words and a great melody. This will make an awesome chorus. Where can this fit? Or let's build a song around it. Or sometimes it is all, I mean, the words are jumping out of the pen faster than you could possibly write. So no two situations are alike, and that's what's so exciting, because there's no formula. You know, maybe in other types of music, there are, you know, specific ways to do things, but, you know, what I love about rock and roll and heavy metal, there are no rules. Anything is fair game.
Well, let's talk about what you guys get going this summer. I know you're playing Rocklahoma, and that's going to be pretty cool. Have you played any of these festivals before, and what else you got planned for the summer?
You know, we have not played festivals of this caliber before, and it's a great opportunity that was presented to us, so we're very much looking forward to that. And we're actually in the process of building a whole May tour that is going to start at the beginning of May 7th at Retrospect Rockfest in St. George, Utah, ironically enough, with Quiet Riot and Warrant.
Cool, man.
So that's going to kind of kick things off, and then we're going to snake our way through the southern United States to Rocklahoma and back. So for the month of May, we're going to be hitting new territories that we've never been, putting our music in front of new faces that we've never seen. And we're very excited at the opportunity.
Well, awesome, man. Well, if you make it down to Texas, you got to look up Genghis and Ragman.
Well, we definitely are going to make it to Texas. I can tell you that right now. I know Wednesday the 20th we're going to be in Dallas, and I'm working on some stuff in Lubbock and Midland right now. So,
well, you got to go a little further south. We're in Houston.
No, I know, I know. We've been looking at the routing, and that's definitely something we want to take advantage of. But good Lord, until I got down to the brass tacks, I didn't realize how freaking huge Texas is.
Dude, it's a big motherfucker.
Man, so, you know, the good thing about us doing this and spreading our wings a little bit is that we're going to figure out what works, what doesn't work, and have the opportunity to repeat it and expand and grow upon it. So, yeah, getting down to Houston, San Antonio, and El Paso, Austin, the whole deal. We definitely want to take advantage of those opportunities as they come and spread our music far and wide.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, Brandon, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com. Before we let you go, though, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Hey, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for tuning in. I appreciate you listening. Thank you for giving Diamond Lane an opportunity. And if you haven't yet checked us in, go to our website, diamondlanerocks.com, or get dialed in on one of the social networks. They're all /Diamond Lane. Check out a video on YouTube, and who knows, you just might find your new favorite band. So thank you for rocking with us on the show, and thank you to you, Genghis and Ragman, for giving guys like me and bands like Diamond Lane a platform and a voice to share our music and expose them to new audiences around the world.
Awesome. Well, Brandon, it was awesome to talk to you, man. We wish you the best of luck in the world, and you're welcome back anytime on the Genghis and Ragman show, brother. Totally.
Hey, you guys can go ahead and count on. As soon as I have some tasty new tunes, they're going to be blowing up your inbox.
What a cool guy. Two cool guys in one episode.
It's like a Sertz commercial.
Wrigley Spearmint Gum.
Shit.
We're the Spearmint Twins, Holmes.
Hi, Holmes. No, I'm down with it, dude. It's nice to get those guys heard.
Yes.
Again, we're just trying to clean some house and take care of some business so that you guys hear these guys. They deserve to be heard. They're good fucking people, good albums. You should listen to them. Check them out.
Totally.
And the usual places, you know where they are.
And we apologize if these interviews sound a little dated, because they are. We just, they hit us at a time right when we were about to go on sabbatical. So we got a little backed up, but we got our metal musel.
And the shit is flowing.
Yes, exactly. So we're going to be on a roll. So you guys are in store for a lot of shows within a short time frame. So good for you.
You pricks. Pour your lemonade and sit down. while you're throwing hot dogs in your face.
Here's Adrian's like, I don't know, like, shit, I just like to do swells, right? Because, Steve Miles over there.
If I pluck this quarter on the strings, it makes a nice little squeaky sound.
I don't think Steve can do that, right?
No, I've never seen him do that. So fuck off.
Dude, how intimidating would that be?
Oh, I know. It's like, why am I doing this? Although, you know, to be fair, Vandenberg's his own guitar hero, but
yeah,
you know, he's an older school kind of. He comes from the older school, whereas fucking Vi's an alien. He's just from Mars, man. That motherfucker's just on a whole other level. So who can fucking compare to him?
Right. Well, guys, we want to thank you for listening tonight. We had a lot of fun. Sorry for a short show for us. I know you die to hear what we have to say.
As always.
But like Inga said, we had some house cleaning. Actually, the next couple shows are going to be a little bit like this, where we did a little bit shorter show because we got to get rid of some interviews and let you guys hear what some of these really cool people we talked to have to say. So, with that said, thank you, and we want to give you two big thumbs up.
This has been Genghis
and Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X, so check them out and keep checking us out, and horns up.